You're listening to Joey Ritter Live at joeyritter.com. Also on Twitter, at Joey Ritter.
All right, joeyritter.com, all on Twitter, at Joey Ritter. I am excited about my guest today, the second guest from the band Plow United, lead singer Brian McGee and solo artist. Thank you for being here. Thank you for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
This is a morning interview, a very rare morning interview. Did you have your breakfast yet?
No, but I've had plenty of coffee, I think.
I have it myself, and I'm kind of, like, scared that I'm going to knock my coffee into my laptop, so I have it back here. But now, Plow United got back together, what, 2 years ago?
Coming up, yeah, it'll be, like, 2 years exactly in, like, September.
Right, yeah. So the band disbanded in 1998, so that's a very long period of time for a band to be inactive, but you guys came back full force, like you didn't miss a beat. Now, when the band disbanded in 98, you moved down to North Carolina, correct?
Correct.
Why did you move down to North Carolina?
I moved down to North Carolina because I found, let's see. There's a place called the John Campbell Folk School, and it was like woodworking, music kind of place, and I was looking for something else to do, and my girlfriend at the time had told me about this place. So I went down to North Carolina, and I got real into playing a lot of banjo and building. I started building furniture. I was like, I'm going to be a woodworker and I'm going to be a craftsperson. And I was living in this community of all these people who were like making their living off of like blacksmithing or furniture building or basket weaving, you know?
Yeah, but I admire that because I am useless. I am not a handyman. I can maybe paint walls, but I can't fix anything. I can't, you know, make anything out of wood. I mistakenly took home economics in high school instead of wood shop, and I feel like it's really cost me in my 30s here. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned the G word earlier, which was girlfriend. Did the other guys kind of say, like, you know, he's getting pressure from his girlfriend to get out of town?
No, it wasn't that. It was, she kind of, like, it was kind of weird because she was like, I'm thinking about, like, applying for a work study to this school where, like, you know, you work off your tuition and all this. I'm like, that sounds cool. What is it? And I looked at it. I was like, oh, that sounds like fun. I think I'll try it too. She's like, yeah, okay, cool. And then we both applied and I got in for like a 2 month stint and she didn't.
Uh-huh.
And so I went away for 2 months and she stayed home.
Oh, wow. I thought she made the move with you.
No. I mean, I was only gone for like, I went in 98 for 2 months and then, and then came home, and then actually in 99 is technically when I like moved down there, and then started my like 5 year stint of like going around different schools and, building furniture and learning how to do all that. And
now what's the best piece of furniture that you've built?
The best piece. I don't know. I built a lot of cool things, I guess. I mean, a lot of chairs. I'm sitting in one now.
Well, now you got to pan down so I can see. I don't know if you've got that propped up or something, but I feel I need to see it.
This guy.
Very nice.
Cheer.
Now, can you sit in that? Is that it looks like it could be a kid's chair.
I'm sitting in one just like it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It looks like a small chair.
No.
Okay.
It's not.
Now, Brian, this week I am obsessed with isolated vocal tracks. This week, Freddie Mercury and David Bowie just kind of, I don't know if they released it or somebody released it for them, but it's the Under Pressure isolated vocal track. The David Lee Roth vocal tracks have been out there for a while. I don't know if you've heard these, but would Plow United ever release an isolated vocal track?
I'm not opposed to it. I guess it would depend from when.
I'm thinking track one on Narcolepsy. I think that would be a fantastic isolated vocal track.
Wow. Let me go visit this isolated vocal track trend and see how it is, and then I'll, you know, because it could be interesting.
I'll tweet it to you. I'm telling you, you would be
okay.
No other bands are doing this. You would be ahead of the curve on this.
Really?
Yeah.
Would you do it?
My own vocals, I don't know. I would do it, but nobody would really want to listen to it. I'm more of a backup vocalist here. But yeah, I'm just think it over. I'll tweet it okay. to you. Now, can we talk a little bit about Joel Tannenbaum, your sure. bass player? Now, Joel was guest number 3 on the show. We're up to episode 49. But Joel, you know, what's the deal with the guy? He's all smart, you know, he knows a lot of stuff. But he always posts these status updates and tweets, and I never know what he's talking about. I know that he's making all these great points, and he's real articulate. But, you know, are you on his level, or do you have conversations with him where you're like, dude, I don't know what you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of like my go-to with, like, I don't understand this, or what's going on with this, what's this mean, you know? And, you know, and he's been very patient with my lack of knowledge on certain things that happen in the world. So, yeah, what are you trying to get me to say, Joey?
I'm trying to say...
Are you trying to get me to turn on my best friend?
Well, actually, I tried to get him to turn on you a little bit because...
Yeah, so you can't break us, dude.
I know. I emailed him... I emailed him offline. I said, you know, I just was looking for a little tidbit, a little like, you know, Brian's a germaphobe or some kind of quirk you had. And what do you think he said in his email response back to me?
I don't know. What did he say?
He said... my gut is this is not a good idea. And I was like, not only do you make me feel silly with your status updates, but you made me feel silly by not giving me any tidbits about Brian.
Any dirt?
You guys got this bond dirt? That cannot be broken.
Yeah.
But one thing he said during our last interview that I cannot get past is he is not a fan of the song Sultans of Swing by Dire Straits. And I don't understand how you cannot be a fan of that song. Now, I put the interview out there, and your drummer, Sean Rule, emailed me, and he said, hey, great interview, I enjoyed it, and I love Sultans of Swing. So that's we're tied at one, so I need you to be the tiebreaker. What is your opinion on Sultans of Swing?
I like it all right. I'm not like, I'm not going to say like I'm a huge fan. I'm not going to say I dislike it. But it's like one of those songs. It's just like there, you know.
As a guitar player, it does nothing for you.
No, it's great, but it's heard it so many times. That, you know, I mean, it's good. If when you're in the mood for it, you're like, hell yeah, Mark Knopfler, sure.
You're
and then
it.
Sometimes I don't know.
All right. Well, you know what? We're gonna score that.
Yeah, so now you got the whole spectrum. You got like. The dislike and the like, and then the mushy.
In the middle.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's fine. Now, Sean's a smart guy as well. He posts these videos online doing Microsoft Excel tutorials.
Yeah.
Did you see the thing he did where he calculates his drumming speed when he was a kid and his drumming speed now?
Oh, yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, he's a maniac.
He's just such a good drummer. What's it like working with him?
It's like Sean slept over and was like, let's go for a run, and then you can't not keep up. You can't not go.
And he just, and that boy doesn't age, does he?
No. I mean, he works his ass off being able to allow himself to play like that.
Right.
But it's like, it's hard.
Yeah, people don't understand that, you know. Because I worked with a drummer who could do that fast, like no effects type beat. And, you know, to keep that. But the same could be said about you, because your vocals, to me, they seem very taxing. You know, like if I tried to sing a Plow United song in the car, my voice would be shot, you know, after 30 seconds. How do you, you know, last through a whole set?
I barely do. And after, like, 3 shows, my voice is pretty much gone. I don't know, like, well, in the 90s, it was like, it was just, that was all I knew how to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just what I did. And then getting ready for Riot Fest for the reunion show, when I still, getting ready for it, I was still in North Carolina before I moved up to Jersey. And so it was very, what I did was I made a playlist of our set, and I would drive around in my minivan screaming just to be able to like get my voice to try and do that again. And it was like, cause it, from like 98 up until like a couple years ago, like I figured I like sort of like destructed, like how to like not how to, like, I figured out how to sing, like how to like not scream loud sing.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm going to like figure out how to sing now. And I think I'm maybe okay at it, but that was like, it's like, oh, like I know how to sing now. Kind of. Okay, cool. And then it was like time to scream again. It was like, now I have to learn how to scream again.
Right.
It was tough.
You got to get the
screaming
in there. Still
tough. Cause we don't do it all the time. So it's.
Yeah. Now you definitely know how to sing because you were kind enough to send me, a track off of your new solo album coming up. Is the album called Ruin Creek, or was the song called Ruin Creek?
Both. I sent you the title track.
Okay, the title track. Great. Now, I'm obsessed with time travel. I like to ask a lot of time travel questions.
Okay.
If 2013 Brian went back to Brian, who just freshly recorded Stupid Jock Rock, right after he recorded those vocals, and you handed him that song, what would he think?
I don't know. He might be okay with it, but he might think it was kind of corny. Yeah.
Now, there's one song, I believe it's called Fire Dogs Are Deaf.
Uh-huh.
And it opens with, like, a door creak.
Yeah.
Was that on purpose?
I think so. yeah, I think that, yeah.
It's just a random door creak, and I always wondered, you know, did they know that the record button was going and somebody was opening a door?
Wow. It could have been both, you know, because it was definitely like, let's put this sound before the song, like, let's put a lawnmower in there, let's, like, let's put a movie quote, you know?
I know the lawnmower one, that was a good one. And Lifeguard, that's a great one as well. Now, are you doing the vocals in Lifeguard? Because it sounds like a completely different singer.
That is 100% Sean Rule.
Oh, really?
Vocal, drums, guitar, and bass.
Does he sing any other
songs?
There's
no Joel, there's no Brian on that song at all.
Oh, wow. All right, I didn't know that. Now, does he sing any other songs, or is that the only one?
Who, Sean?
Yeah.
That was the only one he sang lead on. I mean, he's done like backup stuff, but
gotcha.
Yeah.
All right, now the new
that
album
could be a whole another interview for you. Sean Rule, the Lifeguard interview.
I got to get Sean Rule on because now I feel bad because I've had you and Joel on, and I feel like he's going to feel slighted.
Yeah, that's fucked up, dude.
Thanks a lot. Now I have your new album, Marching Band, right here. Now one thing that's interesting about this is it's a 12-inch record, but it spins at a 45 RPM speed.
Yeah.
And I always forget that when I play it. So when I put the needle down, it's always like, and that, you know, it doesn't sound bad like that, but I always forget.
That was pretty good that we just did that at the same time.
Now you want to talk about highlights, lowlights of recording the album?
I don't think there was any low lights. I think it was, as far as like anything that was like, well, it wasn't really low, but it got to the point where my voice was kind of giving out. Mm-hmm. There's definitely takes of some of the songs that I went back like a week later and redid a couple things. But no, it was all super fun. It was nice to go, not that the Creep House wasn't a real studio, but it was in a basement of a suburban home.
Right.
So
it was
nice.
I've recorded there, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
So, but it was nice to go into like a recording studio, you know, that was built and designed for it. And it was great. We worked with Dave Downham mm-hmm. at the Gradwell House studio. And it was like six, we could take our time, although it was pretty like, we stayed on top of it. I mean, we had to keep like the momentum going, but where we normally would like record in like 2 days, you know, we took like 6 days and I think that sounds like it could have been a recipe for being overproduced, but I think we did a pretty good job.
So I saw on your website that you recently funded one of your solo albums via Kickstarter.
Yeah, that was, well, if recently was like 3 years ago, 2 years ago.
Ah, we'll say that's recently.
Nice.
How does that process go? How do you get people to donate, and what happens if you don't reach your goal?
Well, if you don't reach your goal, you don't get any of the money. So, it's like contributing to public donation amounts and what people will get for those donation amounts. And you before you launch it or propose the project to Kickstarter, you have to like figure out how much money you need and to do all that stuff. And then, yeah, you make a video, the promotional video, and they have to approve it. And then after they approve it, you launch it and then promote the hell out of it. And, so it's pretty straightforward. I've donated to, half a dozen projects that I've come across, mm-hmm. friends, bands, and, different things like that. There's a great, documentary on, a musical of Star Wars all done by kids, which is pretty cool. So you can find some pretty cool projects on there, to contribute to.
Yeah, I need to pay attention to more. I see tweets about it all the time. It's just one of those things that I just never look into. But, after reading your bio and stuff, and, I guess you're the first person I've talked to that's really used it. So, it's a great thing. And, because people aren't buying records as much these days, it's completely necessary. How did you... did you send personal emails to people? Did you tweet about it? I'm sure you did Facebook and all, but like, what was your, what's in it for them kind of message?
Well, the thing that was tricky was that I had already recorded and released the album on CD. So I thought the recording came out really good, and I recorded it in this really nice studio in Asheville. And I wanted it to be on vinyl because I have a healthy record collection, and I wanted, I wanted vinyl. Mm-hmm. So that was the Kickstarter, was to release it on vinyl, which I was like thinking like this may not fly because the album's already out. And so I ran the Kickstarter like maybe 7 months after the CD had already been released and the album was out.
What was your goal?
I think I tried to raise like $3,000.
Okay.
And I exceeded the goal by a little bit. At the end of the day, I still had to like use some of my own money, like sending record, postage and all kinds of stuff like that. But as far as promoting, it was Facebook, tweeting, mailing list, and coming up with, I think the trick is coming up with rewards that feel like feel feasible. And like, I didn't want to be like, for $100, you'll get a record, because it was it should be like, so I made it like $25 will get you a copy of the vinyl and a download and and so on. And so I wanted it to feel like it wasn't like if someone just wanted a copy of the record, like they didn't have to pay $50 to $100 for it. Like I wanted it to like almost feel close to a retail thing. But I did some like house shows and stuff like that.
And raise some money that way. That's cool.
Yeah.
Now, the song Dance Better Than I've Ever Seen. Okay. I know that's it's a running joke. What's that?
Nothing, Joey.
Okay. Have you played that song since, you've gotten back together?
Maybe, maybe not.
I asked Joel the same question and he gave me the same answer. I don't understand why this is such a thing that you guys don't like talking about. What is it with this song? I'm hung up on it now. Like, I won't be able to sleep tonight if I don't know the real answer.
It's corny. It's corny. What's the corniest song that you were ever a part of?
That I ever wrote or listened to?
You ever wrote?
Let's see here. I didn't write many songs, but in high school, I wrote a song about a ugly girl or something that I'm not proud of.
Uh-huh.
But if...
So, let's hear it.
She's a girl, she's a girl, she's a nasty girl. attractiveness is what she lacks. She makes us all want to yak. What a brutal sight to see. Please get away from me. Now, not the, you know, those are 17-year-old lyrics. I'm not proud of them. I would not want to sing them. But if I had, you know, hundreds, thousands of fans that wanted to hear that song, it would take me a New York minute to play that song.
Well, let's work on that. Let's start a Kickstarter to have you release that song to all the people who love JoeyRitter.com. All
right. Well, now, okay. Well, actually, that's a great idea. Let's talk about that offline. A lot of possibilities there. But, you know, I happen to have another album here.
Yeah.
Okay. Sleepwalk.
Uh-huh.
My question is, if you're so anti-dance, why would you put it on the album? Why does it appear there if you don't like to talk about it or play it?
Well, see, that's a retrospective. So it has to, like, it has to be a complete, like, a scope of the band's history. And we had four sides to fill. And by putting it on there, it doesn't mean we have to play it. It's just, you know.
Nah, I think I caught you there. You know, you could have put Stupid Jock Rock or Sorority Girl there.
Yeah, but that's already on a dustbin.
So is Dance.
It is?
Yeah. How do you think I know the song?
Because you're an obsessed weirdo?
I am an obsessed weirdo, but look, I don't know. Something about that song, like, it's not corny. Like, maybe the lyrics are corny if you just read them off a sheet of paper. But when you start singing the intro and Sean does that, da, 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 and he comes in with it, you know, it's, I don't know, man. I mean, there's a reason why people want to hear the song all the time. All right. Well, I clearly haven't convinced you, but I think I can run some kind of tweet campaign where I can get like 20 people to tweet at you a day to play that at your next Philly show or something.
Go ahead.
All right.
That'd be awesome. That'd be great promo for me.
Now, you're a married guy.
I am. You are too.
I am. Got the ring right here. Did you pop the question in any special way?
Yeah, I was going to pop the question on Celia's birthday, okay. But I got wicked sick that day, and I literally was barfing all over the place, not out of nervousness, just like I just had like a bug, and like I was all ready, and like she had no idea, and like was like, you know, making me soup and stuff all day, and then the next day, as I was like starting to recover and look like utter crap, I popped the question in the morning, which was kind of cool because like she was really not expecting it, you know, especially after me recovering from a 24-hour vomit fest.
Right.
So
you think she did expect it on her birthday?
No, I don't. No, she. I don't think she did. She didn't expect it. It wasn't like, oh, something's coming. You know, it wasn't like anything like that. It was. She was pretty surprised.
Hey, Brian McGee, thank you so much for doing the show. People can check you out at brianmcgeemusic.com, twitter.com/brianmcgeemusic, facebook.com/brianmcgeemusic, and you're on MySpace as well. People can go there.
Yeah, I just went there the other day.
It's still there.
I realized that link is still me.
That's where I was reading it from. Brian, I appreciate it. Keep killing it.
Thanks, Joey.
You got it.